Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Matthew Luxmore, Moscow correspondent for RFERL. Matthew, thanks very much for joining me today.
Sure, it's a pleasure, Steve. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Russian President Vladimir Putin will be presiding over the postponed Victory Day military parade this week, the main one in Red Square, on Wednesday, June 24th. It's about 2.5 months after the usual May 9th date, the delay obviously due to the coronavirus. You're in Moscow, Matthew. I imagine you've had jets flying overhead these past few days or weeks, and I've seen reports and social media posts about tanks and APCs actually tearing up the pavement on, I think, Tverskaya Ulitsa, which leads down to Red Square. And the lockdown introduced in Moscow in late March has largely been lifted, and I think new COVID case numbers, at least officially, are down substantially in Moscow from what they were in the past, while more of the new cases are outside the capital. Now, we do know, at least it's been reported by Bloomberg, that about 80 World War II veterans who are to be on Red Square watching the parade, pretty close to Putin, are being kept isolated at a sanatorium outside Moscow for the 2 weeks ahead of the parade. And one thing I'd like to ask, I guess, is sort of what's the feeling in Moscow? Are people thinking it's still too early for this Victory Day military parade, or does it seem like things are getting back to normal and this is part of that? What's the mood there?
Well, it feels almost back to normal at the moment, to be honest. Lockdown was lifted on June 9th, so since then the streets have been full of people enjoying the warm weather, very few of them wearing masks. So cafe and restaurant verandas have been, they were opened earlier this week and they've been packed ever since. Mm-hmm. As far as the parade on Wednesday, it's certainly meant to drive this message, this official message home. Moscow has defeated the coronavirus. So, you know, let's celebrate two historic victories in one fell swoop, so to speak. I mean, as you mentioned, official figures for new COVID infections are markedly down in Moscow, I think with just over 1,000 new cases reported since yesterday. But while there's a sense here that things have improved and we're past the worst, there also remains, I think, a pretty widespread suspicion about the reliability of the government's figures, especially at a time when they're pulling out all the stops to get out the vote for July 1st. So criticism of the parade comes mainly from the camp that sees the vote as a political ploy. That's my sense, at least, which, mm-hmm. You know, in Moscow, which is traditionally kind of a relatively liberal center of opposition sentiment, that kind of camp has been quite sizable, I'd say. But at the same time, you know, we've seen no major street protests against either the parade or the July 1st vote, which, you know, I think is in part because, you know, there's such severe restrictions on gatherings at the moment.
Right. And I guess, I mean, it might be hard to sort of have a packed protest against the parade, which when you're also, you know, criticizing the response to the coronavirus. So, yeah, that sounds interesting. Now, I guess about a week ahead of the parade, which, of course, marks 75 years since Nazi Germany's defeat in World War II, Putin had an article this past week in the U.S. publication The National Interest, and also in Russian in Российская газета, I believe, article about World War II and its causes, its legacy, and what it means today, at least for Putin. Towards the end of the article, Putin expressed hope that the leaders of the five permanent UN Security Council countries will meet this year to discuss cooperation on issues from the coronavirus to world security. Matthew, there were some references in the article that very few people in the United States or the West would really get at all, I think. The number of a Russian military unit whose members fought and died in Chechnya, for example. People would need an explanation for those words. There were other parts that seemed clearly geared toward a U.S. and Western audience. Matthew, what do you think Putin has in mind? Who do you think Putin had in mind as an audience, and what was the main goal of this article?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question I was grappling with on Friday as I was kind of skimming this huge piece. You know, beyond the references to Chechnya, there are others too. You know, references to the Great Patriotic War. Russia's word for, you know, not to go too down in the weeds, but essentially the Eastern Front of World War II,
right,
and kind of certain international bodies that Russia's part of that were cited in the article and kind of and left unexplained,
mm-hmm.
Assuming readers are familiar with them. You know, the piece itself, I mean, it's over 9,000 words long, written in pretty poor English with sloppy editing, you know, missing articles and some pretty odd choices of words.
Yes.
But you know, so that's all, that already makes it rather inaccessible. But more importantly, I mean, the platform chosen, as you mentioned, is a pretty pretty conservative U.S. publication that doesn't have mainstream exposure, and it's often been used as a platform for pro-Russian views. It's published by Dmitry Symes, who is a Moscow-born foreign policy analyst and a regular on Russian TV talk shows. So, you know, it does make you wonder. I mean, Putin's goal here, I think, in light of his recent statements about, you know, alleged Western efforts to rewrite World War II, is pretty clear. The article is definitely meant kind of as a bold statement of his and Russia's view about how the war broke out. You know, a kind of historically not very accurate version of events that essentially exonerates the Soviet Union from blame at a time when, you know, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, this kind of Nazi-Soviet pact that led to the dismemberment of Poland and various other kind of aspects of the war are being, you know, dredged up again, obviously to Russia's kind of chagrin. You know, in that sense, I mean, the article is not really anything new. It's more right. just a kind of summary of points that Moscow has been making for years. But, you know, I mean, to kind of summarize, I think because of the sheer length of the piece and also the platform chosen to publish it and the national interest, I can't imagine it will actually be read by many people other than, you know, World War II historians, political analysts, and I guess, you know, particularly zealous journalists like ourselves, I'd like to think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, another thing that struck me about this article was, as you said, you know, he goes into kind of what happened before the war and makes his arguments and not new ones about the causes. And he completely skips over the post-war, you know, Soviet domination of Eastern Europe. So that's something I think that he's done, you know, this whole time as he's been gathering, sort of making his case about World War II in recent months, amid spats with Poland and other countries, Czech Republic, kind of eliding and just glossing over the post-war situation and Soviet dominance. But in the end, I think, you know, at the end of the article, he makes this call for a permanent meeting of the permanent UN Security Council members, kind of raising this platform. And it's always, you know, I think Putin is always trying to get Russia up there, you know, in the groups of the most powerful, you know, countries after being kicked out of the G8, which became the G7. So, you know, that was one, I think, you know, goal was to kind of push the idea of this meeting, which could apparently take place, you know, if the others agree, and some already have in principle, maybe around the UN General Assembly. So that may have been one of the goals. And also he mentioned the idea that the economy should not be used sort of as a tool against countries in the current situation, which sounds like kind of not a plea, but a statement about, you know, you have imposed sanctions on us. And of course, he also elides over the, you know, in calling for cooperation between the permanent UN Security Council members, which include obviously China, but the US, France, and Britain. You know, he also glosses over the things that Russia has done recently that have, made Western countries, not always want to be involved, have Russia involved in these talks, such as taking over Crimea. So, I think it was a mix of kind of a his historical arguments about World War II and his, kind of long-standing or ongoing effort to kind of redo the security architecture or at least get Russia, involved whenever possible in those discussions. Okay, well, All right. Well, the military parade.
Kind of like sorry, Steve. Go on. Delay on the line, I think.
Okay. Yeah. No, I was just saying we have the military parade this Wednesday, and then a week later, the nationwide vote on the constitutional changes, which you mentioned, including the amendment that would allow Putin to seek two more 6-year terms as president after his current term runs out in 2024. Actually, July 1st is the main voting day, but I think some of the voting will be taking place starting July 25th, the day after the parade. Now, yesterday, Putin said he would consider running again, but has not made up his mind. That seems pretty obvious. Why engineer this option of running for two more terms and potentially ruling through 2036 if you're not going to consider using it? But he also said something pretty striking, which was that if he does not run for re-election in 2024, in about 2 years, the, quote, natural rhythm of work, unquote, will be disrupted by the search for a successor. So he's implying, I think, that or obviously he's implying that there could be a loss of stability if he does not run for re-election. But on the other hand, critics say, well, you've been in power for 20 years. So you're basically saying you don't have time, or it's too much of a bother to step down and seek a successor or a favored successor. Now, Matthew, were you surprised by his remarks? And do you have any thoughts about his motives here in talking about this?
Well, I think one goal seems to simply be to address the elephant in the room, so to speak. As we noted above, the clause allowing Putin to reset his term limits remains pretty much the only constitutional change that is not being actively promoted ahead of the vote. So it's kind of this part of the vote, the clause that will be decided upon by a yes vote that isn't really talked about much, perhaps just because it's so controversial. But obviously that leaves many people asking, is Putin actually thinking of running again? Or if not, what's the point of this clause anyway? We have to remember that while his ratings have slipped, he still has pretty loyal base of support that credits him with lifting Russia from its knees over the past two decades, and they probably would, fear any alternative to him. Which then kind of brings us on to stability, which is what Putin, touts in this TV statement, and which has also been kind of a consistent mantra for him throughout his time in power.
Right.
His legitimacy and the strength of his public support has often been based on the, I'd say, pretty widespread perception that he brought stability and restored order to Russia after the chaotic decade that followed the Soviet collapse, when years of inflation and political instability culminated first in the constitutional crisis of 1993, when then President Yeltsin used tanks to storm the legislature and then brought the country to brought the country to the brink of war, and then secondly, culminated in the financial default towards the end of his Yeltsin's second term in 98, which only drove home, I think, for many Russians, the sense that, Western-style liberal democracy is a very messy and fraught affair. So, I think as Putin's government pulls out all the stops to promote, those constitutional changes that Russians are about to vote on, he's also doubling down on this, tried and tested messaging to the public, essentially saying, if not me, then who else? We certainly don't want to see a return to the wild 90s as Russian officials and government-controlled media call that chaotic period. And right now, actually, Russian state media, there was a big report last night where those images of empty store shelves and fights breaking out in lines for vodka that kind of characterized parts of those years leading up to and following the collapse of the Soviet Union are being very actively replayed right now on Russian TV. And you would think that days ahead of this vote, it is part of a kind of messaging strategy to bring home the point that the Putin is the best we've got and the man who brought stability to the country.
So it sounds like, that's fascinating. It sounds like while it's not sort of being publicly advertised as, vote for Putin to be able to run again for two more terms, at the same time, there's this messaging that is quite clear, quite clearly sort of pointing up the idea that he is the guarantor of stability. I would just say, to me, his remark about, there may be instability, or everyone will be running around seeking a successor, the government won't get worked on. To me, it's a pretty big deal. I think a couple of watersheds were, when Putin did announce in 2011, yes, I'm going to run again after being prime minister for 4 years. That disappointed a lot of people who wanted change. And here, obviously when the amendment that will or would allow him to run for two more terms was announced and engineered in March, there was a lot of the same kind of feelings. And now he's sort of saying, now he's making a case that, I might have to do this. I feel like it's, in the past he's said at other times, there are millions, or maybe not millions, but he's said, there are thousands of people, there are people who could rule this country, there are young people coming up. And now he's basically saying, it's maybe not worth seeking a successor. There's going to be a couple years of instability. So it just seems, to me,
yes, exactly.
It's a bit, I guess, objectively, I don't think he's making a very, very good argument, considering the way he's sort of dispensing with democracy, I would say. So that's a bit of a maybe opinionated view, but it does seem a little bit surprising to me the way he's dealing with this. Okay, well, Matthew, sorry, I've been talking for a while, but I think it's time to wrap it up for today. Thanks very much for joining me.
Sure, no problem. See you. Thank you.
All right. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.